This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being.
Neijing is the vitality that shields us from disease.
Neijing Now, placing and taking responsibility for the health of the individual and the planet. From molecular biology to global ecology, from political, social, economics to psychology and spirituality. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, empowering host resistance. We can be found on the web at neijingnow.org, neijingnow.org. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chandar, and I welcome you to another edition of Exploring Neijing Now. In this episode, we talk to Ms. Jessie Holland, Ayurveda and yoga practitioner.
The way you eat is way more important than what you eat.
Ms. Sangumai Ordonia, acupuncturist and Chinetsang practitioner.
The large intestine is very much an organ of letting go of your crap.
And the famed Mr. Salman Khan, model digester and eliminator.
Yeah, in an ever-changing world, I guess I couldn't count on my regular bowel movements.
First, swine flu is the most recent example of the United States media hogwash. Until 6 p.m. GMT on the 29th of April, 9 countries have reported a total of less than 150 confirmed cases of swine influenza. 91 people have been infected in the United States. One of them has died. According to the World Health Organization updates, Mexico has reported 26 confirmed human cases of the infection, including 7 deaths. I do sincerely extend my condolences to the families of the deceased. Only 7 other countries have reported cases of swine influenza, all with no deaths. Canada, New Zealand, the UK, Israel, Australia, Germany, and Spain. These numbers may continue to grow, and likely there will be a few more deaths. However, the media blitz is totally out of proportion to the number of people affected. This is not a world crisis as it is being made out to be. The WHO has raised the worldwide pandemic alert level to phase 5. A phase 4 alert meant that you can catch the flu from another person and it can cause an outbreak of the flu in the community. This is actually pretty normal for the flu. The increase in the alert phase only means the likelihood of a pandemic has increased, especially if you don't stay home when you are sick and don't wash your hands when you cough or sneeze into them, things your mother surely taught you to do. Phase 5 means countries need to activate their pandemic preparedness plans. 150 people with the flu, less than 10 deaths. The World Health Organization advises no restriction of regular travel or closure of borders. Of course, I am always recommending the dissolution of borders with full freedom to travel, but that is a whole nother conversation. So, they are saying it is prudent for people who are ill to delay international travel. As anyone who is ill should probably stay home and rest anyway. Why is this considered news? WHO also recommends for people developing symptoms following international travel to seek medical attention, as anyone who comes back from traveling and gets ill should do. Newsflash! Okay, this is stuff your mother would tell you to do. The media is making such a big hype about it because perhaps the WHO is trying to usurp your mother. By the way, what do you suppose is going to happen to sales of the only 2 antiviral medications that are effective against swine influenza, and that too only if used within the first 48 hours of the onset of normal cold symptoms, fever, chills, muscle aches, joint pains, cough, sore throat, and runny nose? When was the last time you went to the doctor when you had a cold for 2 days? Well, now you probably will, if you have health insurance. And if you have health insurance, you can probably also get one of those 2 fancy medications. The clinics, run by big businesses these days, and the drug companies, also run by bigger businesses, are making out good. What a swindle. Less than 10 people on the planet have been confirmed to have died from this viral pneumonia so far. Meanwhile, about 150 other people or so have what amounts to a bad case of the flu in the richest nations on the planet, and the whole world is going hog wild. Meanwhile, according to UNICEF's State of the World's Children report, another child will die by the time I am done speaking this sentence. I have 11 pages of statistics, which I pulled out in less than 10 minutes, on how many children die around the world every day from plain and simple diarrhea and malnutrition. Read Thirst and Hunger. This stuff should be headline news every day. The WHO should raise the pandemic alert to off the scale every day. Every year, 10.6 million kids under the age of 5 die. Let's see, 10.6 million divided by 365 is just over 29,000 a day. 29,000 a day, mostly in poor countries, versus about 10 over a few days, mostly in rich countries. Let's say, perhaps, maybe, that many of those deaths in those kids were not preventable. Turns out, though, that at least 2 million of those deaths are due to diarrhea and dehydration. Read thirst. Let me rephrase, due to lack of access to clean water. And undernutrition is the underlying cause of more than half of all those deaths. Let me rephrase, some people are hogging all the food. I know our mothers taught us all to share. It is time the mass media hysteria chimed in with our mothers. Happy Mother's Day. Ms. Jessie Holland is a clinical Ayurvedic practitioner and a certified Iyengar yoga instructor. She gives us some very informative guidelines on how to eat to promote good digestion and elimination. Jessie, I'm so glad that you can educate us about the Ayurvedic perspective on digestion.
Ayurveda views that all illness, all disease starts in the digestive system. So if you can keep the digestion clean, there isn't really a way for illness to continue on into other areas of the body and mind. Specifically, there's something called Agni, which is our digestive fire, located in the stomach and the small intestine. And if food is properly digested by that fire, then there will be no toxins, no undigested food. However, that fire is often not strong enough to digest the food correctly. And therefore, we get something called amma, which is undigested food. And those toxins block channels and then create illness in other areas.
The undigested food is not the poop.
No, that is not the poop.
So what's the difference between this toxin that you're calling amma and poop?
Poop is your food digested without its nutrients, which have been absorbed into the body. Amma is not something that you can necessarily, it's not necessarily tangible. So you imagine you have like a campfire in your belly and your food is like the logs. Let's say the fire goes out and you're left with partially burned logs. That's not something that goes out of the body. It's non-eliminated, therefore it's not poop. It gets stuck in the body. It can manifest to be some sort of circulation problem. It can manifest to be a mental disorder. It can manifest many things because it blocks different tissue layers. If the fire is really strong, not too strong, but really strong, all the tissue layers will be fed correctly and everything will live very healthfully.
So you're talking about a clean combustion engine.
Yes, you want the fuel to definitely be burned completely. However, there are conditions where the fire is too strong. It will burn up the food, the fuel, and it will also burn up surrounding tissues, resulting in ulcers, for instance. It's not that you just want the fire to be extremely strong. It has to be balanced for each individual.
Right, so you don't want a campfire out of control, basically.
Exactly. You can tell what your digestion is like through elimination. So if you examine your stool, for instance, and it's more loose, that generally means that the fire is too strong. So there are ways to dampen that with different food groups and different herbs and spices and different ways of living. If you're constipated, that probably means the fire is a little variable. Like maybe you feel really hungry, which means your fire is high. But the moment you start eating, you're not hungry anymore. And that means the fire has gone out. And therefore, the food gets stuck. And then everything gets stuck. And then you cannot go to the bathroom.
Primarily, it sounds like digestion is related to the fire element.
It's mostly related to the fire element. It's not only the fire element, of course, all five elements have their part in digestion. The five elements are earth, air, fire, water, and ether. Ether is like space. All of the elements take place in digestion. For instance, food is earth. Almost all food is of the earth. So you have to eat earth to digest. You need water, saliva, enzymes to help digest the food. Air, there's a particular air called Samana Vayu, which blows onto the Agni, onto the fire, and that's what keeps it going.
Samana Vayu, what, can you explain what that is?
Samana means like balanced. Vayu is air. So Samana Vayu balances the digestion, and it's in the center of the body. For people that have variable air in their body, for instance, if you have a lot of anxiety or you're driving and then you're stopping and you're going here and there, air goes up and down, up and down. That air also goes up and down on your fire. So the fire can be stoked really high and then it can go out. And spaciousness also has to do with digestion, because in the stomach, you want to make sure there's enough space for everything to be churned. If there's no space and it's all full, then the digestion won't work as well.
Or if you wear tight pants.
Or if you wear tight pants, yes. You should wear loose pants. Very true.
What are the factors that keep Agni burning cleanly?
Universally, there are guidelines to eating. In Ayurveda, we see people with different constitutions, different body types. Leaving that aside, because it becomes very specific, there is a universal way to eat. In fact, there's an old saying in Ayurveda, the way you eat is way more important than what you eat. So you could eat a Big Mac in a nice way.
Can we not encourage that?
That would be better, however, than eating like rice and mung beans and steamed vegetables, driving in a car and talking on the phone. Because if you're angry or if you're distracted while you're eating, the food will not be digested. We're meant to be doing one thing at one time, thinking one thing at one time, not multitasking. It really screws up the digestion.
So if we want to eat the Big Mac, then how should we eat it?
Well, I'm not advocating that, but how you should eat it is, one, always take a moment before a meal. It can be grace. It can be just a moment to observe the qualities of the food, the smell, the colors, just to honor what's come to you. And this also prepares the body to digest. You prepare the vessel to take the food.
That's really, really beautiful.
Ayurveda is beautiful. And number two is chewing completely. Just chewing to make sure the food becomes an even consistency in the mouth before you swallow it. Maybe even swallowing before you pick up your next bite. So it becomes a slower process. You taste the food. It becomes more of an enlivening process. When you forget what you eat and you aren't aware when you eat, you can overeat, which is one of the biggest problems our society faces. And one of the biggest problems with poor digestion.
When you take the time to chew and taste and smell, it becomes a very sensual experience.
Yeah, a sensual, a ritual, a moment to connect with yourself. And all of Ayurveda is purely about refinding the connection with your true self. And you can find that through eating. It's one of the best ways to find it. One of the guidelines is to eat until you're 75% full. Leave a quarter of your stomach empty. So you're satiated, but you are not overly full. You can breathe, you can think, you can go for a walk without getting a stomach ache. Part of that is that you should fill the stomach half with solid food and a quarter with liquid, which doesn't mean drink water with food. It means that, you know, if you have a food that is soupy, for instance, then you wouldn't need any liquid with your meal. But if you're eating just pure grains and beans that aren't very liquidy, you might need a few sips of warm water throughout the meal. But never more than a half a cup of liquid with your meal. Those are the most important guidelines of eating. There are a few more. For instance, your biggest meal should be during the day.
You mean like a midday meal?
A midday meal, lunchtime meal. Dinner should be the smallest. Our rhythms mirror the rhythms of nature. When the sun is at its highest, that's the element of fire in the sky. Our fire in our body becomes the highest. So it's most able to digest a larger meal. Well, and when it's nighttime, the digestion is really starting to go down. So a very light meal, maybe a bowl of soup.
It's kind of the opposite of what everybody does in the Western world.
Yes, it is.
Part of it's related to also how society is structured now with work. You get maybe half an hour and you're expected to work through that half hour while you're eating your lunch, or that's a meeting, or it's a productivity quotient here.
It's very difficult to deal with. There are external factors that cannot be changed sometimes.
Or if you do choose to change them, you're really overhauling your life, which maybe is something we should advocate.
Definitely advocating a longer lunch hour would be beneficial. But even in a half an hour, if you learn to prepare a meal and take it, it doesn't take more than 10, 15 minutes to eat with awareness. It's that you have to go get the lunch, the demands of work. Those can slowly change. I mean, if you have intention to change it, it will happen.
And what about the siesta after lunch?
Well, if you don't overeat, you don't need a nap.
But if you undersleep, you may need a nap.
That's very true. But sleeping after you eat is harmful for the digestion.
So there goes our Spanish culture.
Well, there is one thing you can do. You can lie down on your left side for about 10 to 15 minutes. If you lie on your left side, you'll stoke the fire as well. You'll breathe through your right nostril, which helps to activate the Pingala Nadi, which is the fiery nadi, to help digestion go. And also the structure of where the stomach is, it will help the digestion. And that's actually advocated in Ayurveda. Either that or going for a gentle walk, nothing too rigorous.
So all these walking clubs at work that go out and get their power walk half hour after lunch?
Not the best thing. Just a gentle stroll. Look at the flowers, breathe the fresh air, look at the ocean, the sky, whatever is around there. Find some piece of nature, even if it's within the office, a walk down the hall, but something so that you don't go straight into work again or straight into some sort of a mental activity or emotional space.
Are those the major guidelines that everybody can use, yeah, regardless of their constitution or their imbalance?
Definitely.
So what about the ama? Well, how do we clean that out?
Well, you clean out the ama through eating consciously. And then there are other ways. One is food combining is very important. Certain food groups don't combine well when you digest. The main one is that fruit should be eaten alone.
And not with milk.
And not with milk.
So the bananas in the cereal, not happening. The fruit milkshakes, not happening. The fruit in the yogurt, not happening.
This is true, yes. That's one of the hardest things to digest. Fruit digests quickly, but if it goes into the system with anything else, it kind of gets pushed aside and the other things digest, so it putrefies in the stomach.
That sounds gross.
Yes, it creates it creates gas. Many people that have a lot of gas cut out their fruit mixtures and it can be relieved.
Does it also cause putrid gas?
Yes, putrid gas. And painful stomachs, bloating. A lot of bloating is just the retention of gas. People don't let it out, which is another rule in Ayurveda, is to let out all of your natural urges. Because if you don't, then you build up ama because you're not allowing the waste to come out.
So like, don't hold it when you have to go. Don't hold it when you have to pass the air. Don't hold it when you have to pee, poop, sneeze, cough, laugh, cry.
Yes, all of those, they should come out freely, with respect to the people around you, of course. But also to reduce the ama is you can eat a doshically appropriate diet.
What does that mean, doshically?
Dosha is the Ayurvedic constitutions. There are three of them. There's vata, pitta, and kapha. Air and space combined together create vata.
Great, wind.
Wind, exactly. And pitta is fire and water mixed together. And then kapha is earth and water. So very heavy, very stable. Those qualities, you can look for them in yourself in the way you are physically structured. You can look for them in yourself in the way your mind moves, in the way your emotions are.
With your preferences also, what you like, yes, what you're attracted to.
Yes, yes. So you can eat a diet that's appropriate to what constitution you are. If you're more earth, more water, more of a kapha individual, you would want to add the other elements to you. So it's about balancing opposites. You would want more fire in your diet, more air, more space, more hot foods, more dry foods, more vegetables. So if you eat appropriately for yourself, then you have a better chance of digesting.
I'm glad you're bringing this up and talking about balance. And one of the things that seems so contradictory to everything that we're being taught is that if you're a person with too much wind element or a constitution that's more wind, then perhaps heavier foods, richer foods, oilier foods, even fried foods are actually good for you.
That's true. We are pounded with low fat, low cholesterol. And yet most of us are vata vitiated, a vata imbalance, because of the way the society is.
So stress and fast-paced sleep deprivation, worry, all these things aggravate the vata element, the wind element.
Yes, yes, all of them aggravate the air element. Fried food, like you mentioned, would be good for vata, but of course it has to be good quality oil, right? You wouldn't want corn oil or peanut oil or high triglyceride oil, right? You need some good quality oils like sesame and flaxseed and coconut and...
Olive oil?
Olive oil, great, yes. Raw, unfiltered oils, organic oils, everything in Ayurveda. You should have wholer ingredients, ingredients that are closer to the earth, unprocessed, things that are more in their natural state. But yes, for a wind imbalance, it's very important to feel nourished. the wind element goes through the body and just rips us apart pretty much. It decays, it peels away tissue, it peels away our mental tissue, which creates a little more irrational behavior, maybe a little bit more reactivity, because there's not enough cushion. There's not enough nourishment or stability to support the wind. And we need all of the elements. It's not that one is bad and the other is good. You need a balance of them all. So yes, for a Vata individual, you would want like avocados, good oils, nuts, good oils, oil itself, taking flaxseed, taking fish oil if you're non-vegetarian. Cooking with oil is very important. Warm foods, less salads, less crackers, less chips, something that feels warm and moist.
Very interesting. It's so beautiful.
The one thing that I really like about Ayurveda in the West is that it can't be perfectly traditional. Right? We have to work with where we are. You can do it. It's not impossible. You know, you don't have to go live at the base of a mountain somewhere. You can just choose to eat certain things. So for instance, if you eat meat, there are many meat eaters out there. Meat is very difficult to digest with grains or with potatoes. And it's a traditional diet, you know, meat and potatoes or meat and pasta or meat and rice. And those two just, they do not combine. So best to eat meat just with vegetables. And you mentioned once already today that cereal with bananas, also cereal with milk, grains shouldn't be combined with dairy.
So no toasted cheese?
No toast and cheese. But there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Is that the tunnel of elimination or what?
Yes, the tunnel of elimination will go a lot more smoothly. I should mention this because I've had some friends in the past mention that going to the bathroom once every 3 days is normal and fine. And according to Ayurveda, at least once a day is very important. Every morning, one should get up and almost within the first hour, go to the bathroom, clean out the system. So if you're going to the bathroom every couple days, there are ways to get you going. Foods and ways to eat and herbs.
And enemas.
Enemas, yes. Enemas as well, but used in an appropriate way. No colonics.
What's the difference between a colonic and an enema?
Colonics are a lot more invasive. It's a lot stronger, and they tend to dry you out. They use coffee and water. And Ayurvedic enemas are generally prescribed for you, and there's a much smaller amount, like a pint or so of liquid, and it keeps it moist because you put oil in it. One of the practices also to keep your digestion and elimination going, but also to give you clarity in your mind, is every morning to wake up to scrape your tongue first. Scraping your tongue is like scraping the digestive tract of the toxins. You look at your tongue in the morning and there'll be some kind of coating on it. That coating is a reflection of what is going on in the digestive tract. So if you take the coating off every morning, it's like giving the intestines, the stomach, a little massage. And right after that, you're to drink one glass of warm water, maybe two. But it helps to push it out. It does. Water before coffee, definitely. And if you're having a hard time, you could also squat on the toilet.
Yeah, I only squat.
Not everybody does. But it's very, very helpful.
Yeah, you get a little abdominal pressure. You get a little assistance.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the butt cheek spread.
Yep, and the direction of the rectum kind of moves down in a better way.
So how do you tell, besides your tongue, when you have a buildup of this ama?
Pretty much all of us have some ama. Observing just your general energy level, how you relate to the world, irritability, feel tired, aren't getting a lot of sleep, if you're just feeling off. And also, you can observe your stool. The perfect stool.
Please tell us about the perfect stool.
The stool we're looking for is a log, a consistent color, like a medium brown. It can vary in color depending on your dosha, but it shouldn't be like black on one area and brown on another and yellow on another. No food particles stuck up in there. And a floating log. If the log sinks, that means you may have some ama, because ama is heavy. If you have bad breath, you have ama.
A floating brown log of consistent color.
Yes, and soft as well. But you want to make sure that the stool passes easily. There shouldn't be any straining, any sharp edges, any pain. But it also shouldn't just fly out very quickly. Then it would probably become more loose.
So no pushing, no grunting. And you shouldn't have to sit there and wait and wait and wait for it to come.
Ideally, but you know, some constitutions have to wait a little longer, but that's about cultivating patience. And if you let go, it'll probably come out.
What about this habit some people have of reading on the toilet?
That actually can help vatas.
How does it help?
Well, if you just relax, read something light, maybe you relax enough to let the poo come out.
And some people use caffeine and nicotine to get their bowels moving.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the Ayurvedic choice. Caffeine is very, very hot. When your digestion is very hot, you go very quickly. That can create loose stools because you put something hot in the body becomes overheated. And a way to release heat is through elimination, through peeing, through pooping, through sweating.
Isn't caffeine also very vata vitiating? If you aggravated vata, wouldn't that be kind of counterproductive to eliminating?
Well, eventually, yes. It's a very strong drug. Caffeine is very, very, very drying. That's why coffee enemas or coffee colonics are so not good for the colon, because it dries out the edges of the lining of the colon. But similar with vata is it will eventually just create a lot of dryness. And at some point, it's not going to work anymore.
How do you tell if you are digesting well?
If you're digesting well, you wouldn't be experiencing any gas or bloating or heartburn or heaviness and sleepiness after eating. These are big telltale signs that you're not digesting correctly.
So you said that overeating is a big problem. What about undereating?
Undereating is also a problem, yes. It will vitiate vata as well. We won't get enough nutrition. Emaciation will happen. Gas will probably happen. Bloating will happen. Sometimes people feel bloated and therefore they don't want to eat more. But actually, sometimes eating is the only thing that can help bloating. Make sure you're eating regularly. Some people need 2 meals a day. Some people need 4 meals a day. It depends on your constitution. But you should eat when you're hungry. That's one of the other main rules that I haven't addressed yet is you should only eat when you're hungry. But if you're not hungry and you eat, it's too much. If you're hungry and you don't eat, your fire's going to go out or it's going to burn up the other tissue.
A lot of people are dieting.
But the problem, I think, in this culture mostly is that we have a little bit of a distorted view of what we look like and what we should look like. Everyone's different. Every constitution is happy at a different weight. There are ways to lose weight if you have too much kapha, but if you're very thin and you're trying to lose weight, you're just going to eat your tissue and it'll create a long-term imbalance.
But if you're very fat and you're trying to lose weight, in Ayurveda, you can still eat whenever you're hungry?
You should eat when you're hungry, yes. But what you eat, how much you eat, that's very important. And then observing whether it's emotional hunger or not.
Emotional hunger.
We like to eat sometimes to fulfill a void inside. The main point is that eating with awareness is the most important key. Living with awareness is the most important key. So if you can just take a few breaths and chew your food and pay attention, you'll have a lot better chance of digesting well and eliminating well.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. Me too.
Ms. Jessie Holland, clinical Ayurvedic practitioner and certified Iyengar yoga instructor.
Di. Na. Takataka denigene, takataka denigene, takit da da, giranaga denigene, takatenikene, takatenikene, denigene da, kitataka nagan and nagan and naga, takit, takit, taka digan and digan and digan nagan and nagan and nagatan and tan and takit dan and tatraka detetekata gadigan and da da da. Tatraka detetekata gadigan and da da da. Tatraka detetekata gadigan and da da.
Ms. Sangumaya Ordonia is a licensed acupuncturist and Chinese herbalist and a certified massage therapist. She specializes in Asian styles of massage, including Ashiatsu, Thai, and Chinate Sung, which is Taoist abdominal massage. She shares with us how the elements and emotions are related to our organs and digestion. Sangumaya, can you tell me about the traditional Chinese medicine perspective on digestion?
In Chinese medicine, good digestion is essential for the generation of what we call postnatal qi, the vital energy that you get after you're born. Postnatal qi comes from the spleen and the stomach. The spleen is also considered to be a digestive organ in Chinese medicine. Good digestion is also essential for the immune system. The stomach takes the food that you eat and separates it into what we call the pure and the impure. And it takes the impure and sends it down to the large intestine and it gets excreted. The pure then goes to the small intestine, where it's further separated into the pure and the impure. And then the pure goes again into a place that we would call the triple heater, which is not an actual organ, but it's more a function. The triple heater then takes that pure food essence, basically, and then sends it to the kidneys. The kidneys are the source of what we call, or they hold what we call the yuan qi, the original qi that you're born with. And it's the original qi that creates what we call wei qi, which is defensive qi, which is a big part of immune function. Then the wei qi gets sent to the liver. The liver is responsible for distributing it around the body and particularly to the surface where it defends your body from the invasion of pathogens. And if you have strong wei qi, then you won't get sick.
So that's kind of like our neijing that we're talking about in neijing now, that vitality that shields you from disease.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
And you define qi as vitality.
I would say that it's vital energy.
It seems to me from what you're saying that digestion is primarily an immune system function.
I wouldn't say that's just it, because it also generates qi for the body to use. The spleen is partnered with the stomach as a digestive organ, and it takes the pure food essence from the stomach and then transforms it into qi and then transports it around the body to places where you need it. So digestion is not just about the immune system. It's also about creating vital energy for the body to use in daily activities.
Like the energy to just run or do your work or have your normal day.
Yes.
Yeah, because you feel low in energy if you don't eat. How do the Chinese meridians play into this?
The meridians are pathways of acupuncture points that can be accessed on the surface of the body, but all meridians also have pathways that are internal. So, for example, the stomach meridian can be accessed on the surface of the body, but it also has pathways that actually go through the stomach organ. You can needle or use acupressure on or essential oils on certain points that have certain functions that can affect the internal organs.
So which are the meridians that relate to digestion?
Well, we would think of the stomach, the spleen, the large intestine. We tend to use the small intestine more for other issues.
So the kidney and liver are not meridians that would affect digestion?
I don't usually use points on the kidney meridian. I do use points on the liver meridian, definitely, because liver affects the regulation of the flow of qi in the body. And when liver qi is not flowing smoothly, that will affect digestion. We say that when the liver is unhappy, it can overact on the stomach or on the spleen, and that can have bad effects on your digestion.
Very interesting. How does Chinese medicine define good digestion?
Good digestion in Chinese medicine would be the absence of fatigue after you eat, not requiring a long period of time to digest something, being able to digest without any bloating, without any feeling that something is stuck. Good digestion would be the absence of what we would call rebellious qi or counterflow qi, when you might have acid regurg or belching, the absence of gas. So the absence of symptoms and feeling like you're being nourished by your food is a good sign. Ideally, you would be having at least one bowel movement every day, and it should be formed and it should be easy.
So, for example, when you say how long it takes to digest something, how does a person recognize how long it's taking to digest something? It's not necessarily something that you can tell that's happening.
It varies from person to person because each individual has their own constitution. They have their own health issues. But I think that if you have a feeling that something's really heavy, or you feel sluggish afterwards, or if you feel nauseous, that is a sign that you have digestive difficulty.
Do you measure the time of how long it takes to digest something by when it comes out in your poop? Like, I ate some carrots today and I must see the carrot color in my poop tomorrow.
I wouldn't necessarily go by the colors of what you ate. Yeah, I would go more by the form of your stool in the sense of, is it firm? Is it really watery? Are there food particles in it? Kind of thing.
I mean, for me, if I eat peas, I see the peas the next day in the poop. So I figure it's only taking me 24 hours to move things through.
If you're seeing whole peas in your bowel movement, then you might also be someone who eats quickly. When we see undigested food particles in someone's stool, then we think also about spleen qi deficiency. The vital energy of the spleen is not strong enough to digest and transform things.
Interesting, very interesting.
Another very important function of the spleen is that it makes blood. If your digestion is not strong, your spleen will be weak and it won't make blood.
That makes sense. It seems like you would make blood from the nutrition that you receive.
I also think of the digestive organs from a Qine Tsong perspective. Qine Tsong is Taoist abdominal massage.
Taoist abdominal massage.
Taoist abdominal massage. It's a style of massage that was created by Taoist monks centuries ago, ideally to be able to refine their energies so they could do higher levels of spiritual practice. This form of massage is obviously very good for digestive health because it's working directly on the digestive organs. Qine Tsong is based on the tenet that symptoms and illnesses are manifestations of emotional charges that are held within the body. Each organ is related to a particular emotion.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, so I'm glad you brought it up.
So by working on the organs, you can also work on the emotions and hopefully guide the receiver through a greater process of awareness. So in Qine Tsong terms, the large intestine is very much an organ of letting go of your crap in the physical sense, also of the emotional charges that you're holding on to that are creating obstacles in your own development, in your own evolution.
Makes total sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the stomach and spleen are part of the earth element in Chinese medicine. The earth element is associated with the ability to stay grounded, to stay centered, to stay rooted, no matter what you're experiencing. So it helps you through transition. And it also allows you to have greater self-esteem, have respect for yourself. It also helps you to stay in the present moment, which of course is an essential component of being grounded. It is very much about your capacity to take in nourishment, but also to nurture others.
Beautiful. Tell me more about liver and kidney and the emotional charges.
An emotion that's associated with the earth element, the spleen and the stomach, is worry. So we say that worry can weaken the spleen. Worrying too much or overthinking, something that students do, for example. These are what we might think of as the unwanted emotions.
Yeah, tell us about both. So it'd be interesting to know about the liver and the other organs.
The liver is associated with anger, frustration, resentment. The liver is paired with the gallbladder. The liver and the gallbladder are part of the wood element. The liver is also related to your aim in life, having direction in life. We also say that the soul rests in the liver at night, and we say that when the ethereal soul is rooted in the liver, that we have a sense of direction in life. The gallbladder we associate with the unwanted feeling of timidity. The positive side is a strong gallbladder is associated with decision-making. In China, when you want to say that someone's courageous, you say that he has a big gallbladder.
Wow, the gall of them to say that. We say that too, don't we?
The gall. Yeah.
Gall. He had the gall to tell me that blah, blah, blah.
Although I think courageousness is generally considered to be more positive than being presumptuous, for example.
Right.
And you were asking about the kidneys. The kidneys are related to the water element, paired with the bladder, not surprisingly. The unwanted emotion related to the water element is fear. On the positive side, the kidneys are related to willpower. The water element is also associated with creativity, not just in the sense of artistic creativity, but the ability to create life, procreation.
Wow, very interesting. And does the pancreas play any role in any of this?
Good question. The pancreas is generally lumped in with the spleen. Some texts will refer to that energetic function or those energetic functions as the spleen pancreas.
So the main emotional charges that can be stored in the belly or in the digestive tract seem to be frustration, anger, decision-making, courage, self-esteem, power, or weakness. That's the emotional environment of the belly.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the emotional environment because it varies from person to person how balanced their organs are. I also left out the large intestine. The large intestine is paired with the lung in one pairing. They're part of the metal element. The metal element is associated with your ability to stay in touch with your emotions. The unwanted emotions that are related to the metal element are sadness and grief. The positive aspect of that is the ability to let go, because ultimately grief and sadness arise from an inability to let go of an idea, an attachment to something, wishing that something were different, wishing something had been different.
Yeah, or the loss of someone or something, or breaking up, etc.
Exactly. And so if you're able to let go of that person or that idea about some situation or about a person, then you don't have those feelings of sadness and grief.
Or they resolve more quickly.
Yes. The small intestine is paired with the heart in the fire element. The negative or the unwanted emotion would be overjoy.
That's interesting.
So the positive aspect of that would be happiness. People often associate compassion with the heart. In Qi Nei Tsong, we might also associate compassion with the liver, in the sense that when you are relaxed, when you're not in a place of anger, your capacity for generosity that can take the form of compassion is greater.
Beautiful. Well said. So we've got almost all the elements then. We've got the earth element in the stomach and the spleen. We've got the wood element in the liver and the gallbladder. We've got the water element in the kidney and the bladder. And the fire element in the small intestine and the heart. And the metal element in the large intestine and the lung. And you've told us all these emotions that go along with it. It's very, very interesting. Overjoy might be translated as passion.
No, not so much passion, although I should have said passion as part of the positive aspect, like passion for life, passion for doing certain things. Overjoy, I think some might translate as madness, craziness, mental illness. I should also say that the small intestine is also associated with sorting. Like earlier I said that it separates the pure from the impure, but sorting also in an emotional sense, often when you experience a trauma and you don't feel ready to process it at that time, people will have a tendency to stuff it down in the small intestine and say, oh, I'll deal with that later. I'll sort that out later.
Do you actually see then pathology in the small intestine?
In a Qi Nei Tsong sense, I wouldn't say that we do a lot of techniques that work directly on the small intestine, although you are working on the small intestine when you're working on the abdomen. But what I tend to see more often is when someone has reached a point where they are ready to deal with an issue, the issue will start to come out into their large intestine, will start to exit the small intestine. Sometimes it'll get stuck in the ileocecal valve, and you can feel that, literally, that stagnation there, until the person is ready to start looking at it, and then it will go through the ileocecal valve into the colon, into the large intestine.
Wow, that's impressive.
Since Qi Nei Tsong at its foundation is emotional work, during a treatment you will often see people experiencing emotional release. You will see people experiencing the arising of emotions that perhaps they developed strategies to suppress or repress. You don't always see the arising of those emotions during the treatment. Sometimes it happens afterwards, and it could happen when they leave the space. It could happen a week later. Sometimes it manifests as a big emotional discharge, like maybe they suddenly get really angry, maybe they suddenly have a crying jag. But actually the most profound changes are the most subtle. Those tend to manifest when someone encounters a situation that in the past had always been a big trigger for them. They realize, I don't really care, and that's completely fine. And they may not realize at the time that they've experienced that shift until much later.
That's intense, actually.
Yeah, so actually they have been able to make a shift to the point that they were able to let go of their desire to have that situation have a particular outcome.
Wow, beautiful. That's really strong work.
It can be very liberating in that way.
Do you see that Chi Netsang actually affects people's actual physical digestion and elimination?
Absolutely. A lot of people come to me because they have problems with elimination, with constipation. I would say the majority of those people tend to have issues relating to the liver, anger. That emotional stagnation creates qi stagnation. So the liver's ability to regulate the flow of qi is impairing their ability to have a bowel movement, to let go.
People must come to you with ulcers or other digestive issues as well.
They do. And then we work a lot on their sense of self, the expectations that they've placed on themselves, the image that they have created of themselves in the world. We work on trying to shift their perspective so that they aren't necessarily as hard on themselves as they have been to the point that they've developed an ulcer.
And you do that through talking, or you just do that through the abdominal massage?
I do both, but not everyone likes to talk during the massage. A lot of people just want to receive. Some people like to talk through the entire treatment. I don't actually recommend that because talking engages the mind and it takes you away from the breath and it takes you away from your belly. Bringing the qi to the belly is much more therapeutic, actually.
So what you're saying is actually that ulcers and constipation and diarrhea and reflux and gas and bloating, they all have an emotional component.
Yes. Unless, of course, you, for example, get a parasite and take tons of antibiotics and it kills all of your intestinal flora and makes it difficult for you to digest. That's clearly an external source. Although some might argue that if you have a really, really strong immune system, then maybe you wouldn't have suffered that pathogen invasion in the first place.
Wow, incredible. Beautiful.
And I should say, too, about ulcers that there is a strong component of the liver overacting on the stomach, creating that stagnation and burning the heat that is associated with ulcers.
And that heat isn't a part of the fire element?
No, not in this sense. When qi stagnates for a long period of time, it can generate heat in the same way that, for example, if people are stuck in a tunnel and during rush hour, they start to get angry, they start to get irritable. That anger generates heat.
It's a good analogy. Well, this has been a very informative and enlightening and thought-provoking conversation, Sangumai.
Oh, good. It was fun.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Ms. Sangumai Ordonia, acupuncturist and Chi Netsang practitioner. Na. Tatet, tatarigit tatet, tatarigit tati, 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 tage, dinagin, nanagin, nanakatan, tete, tatarigit tete, kataga digin, kita, taka, tatarigit tete, kataga digin. Mr. Salman Khan is famous as a model digester and eliminator. He generously shares with us his impeccable and inspirational bowel habits. Salman, I'm really happy that you've agreed to share your story with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being had.
Thank you.
It's very generous of you to share your digestive habits with us.
Well, such a personal issue, but I'm willing to give it a go.
So to speak.
So to speak.
All right. So can you tell us how you go?
Well, how regular I am or...
Tell us everything. Tell us as much as you're willing to reveal.
My goodness. Okay. In terms of regularity, I generally go once a day. It's usually in the morning. Like most people in the West, I sit on a toilet.
A commode.
A commode.
Do you relieve yourself every day at around the same time?
Yeah. For whatever reason, my bowel has got into the habit of purging itself in the morning. Well, I'll get up, I'll take some water, and then usually like clockwork, I'll go to the bathroom and relieve myself.
How much water do you drink?
Maybe half a cup. Generally warm water. That tends to stimulate my gut. Usually that's all it takes.
Something you learned from your family or something you started in your adult years?
I can't say it's something I learned from my family. It's just something that I've intuitively picked up and, in a sense, tried to do what I can to facilitate its seemingly natural process.
You don't have to walk around or have a little morning constitutional walk?
No. Usually that's sufficient for stimulation and elimination across the nation.
Well, it's impressive that you're so regular. I mean, most people are not exactly so regular. You know, you're pretty much done with your duties before you even leave for work in the morning.
Yeah, it's something that it's not usually shared in normal conversation. I have no idea, really, for instance, with my partner. I have no idea what her bowel movements are. And we live together. I guess part of my assumption is that most people have regular bowel movements. But I guess that's not the case.
Many people don't. That's wonderful. You have regular movements every day. Can you describe the movement?
Yeah, it's pretty, well, who's to say what's normal? I believe the color is normal, which is brown, and sausage-shaped.
Consistency is?
Firm.
You have to push?
Generally not. I guess I receive a decent amount of fiber in my diet, enough for me to not have to really strain to relieve myself.
Are there other factors you would say that contribute to how excellent your elimination process is?
Other factors?
Well, what about water? What about emotions? What about what you eat, your diet, your lifestyle?
Well, I know, hopefully my sister won't mind me talking about her. She's had an issue with colitis ever since she was a kid. And to me, it's no doubt it was an emotional issue. So yes, I think emotions can and do affect our bowel movements. But given that my bowel movements are pretty regular, I would say either I'm really, really uptight or I'm not at all. I'm assuming that I'm not, but then it's hard to gauge.
Is it possible that the regularity of your bowel movements actually is what keeps you happy?
Oh, interesting. No, I don't believe that my happiness comes from a regular bowel movement. But then having said that, I think I would find it disconcerting if they became irregular. It's weird. It's just something I can count on, strangely enough.
Gives you a sense of security.
Yeah, in an ever-changing world, I guess I can count on my regular bowel movements.
So your emotional stability in general, you think, has something to do with it?
Yeah, perhaps. I'm reasonably even-keeled.
What other factors? Diet, exercise, how much water you drink?
I usually will eat a cereal in the morning that will provide a certain amount of fiber. And then I try and stay hydrated throughout the day.
Exercise?
I don't exercise as much as I like to.
Wow. So you're kind of like the model digester and eliminator.
Apparently so. I will go home today with a deep sense of pride, given that realization.
An accomplishment.
Accomplishment, absolutely.
It's like a daily achievement.
Yeah, I start the day off clean and refreshed.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy with you. Do you have anything to say about how you eat? Do you generally eat sitting down or on the go? Do you eat slowly? Do you chew well? Do you eat in a rush? You know?
I generally eat sitting down. I don't eat as mindfully as I would like to. I have a tendency to eat too fast, which comes from eating not mindfully. Yeah.
Great. Do you ever have any problems with indigestion, burping, burning, any kind of problems with your GI tract?
I do. I suffer from IBS-like symptoms of gas and bloating.
Have you figured out what causes that?
No. Actually, one of my sisters went to see a specialist recently and was told that it was hereditary, because I know that my dad had tremendous issues, gut issues. And it turns out that actually all my siblings do as well, and there's five of us in total.
So what does that mean for you?
That means that after eating, and I haven't been able to put it down to certain types of food, but usually in the afternoon, I'll suffer from pretty bad bloating and gas.
That you are able to release?
Yes. Sometimes not to the benefit of my coworkers, but I try and go for a walk and relieve myself outside in the fresh air.
You know, once the afternoon has passed and you've kind of finished digesting your meal, then you're fine after that.
Generally, sometimes it can carry on into the evening, but there's something about the afternoon meal that really stimulates this problem.
Do you think you're more stressed? You're eating at work and that kind of thing?
I don't believe it's because of stress. I believe that stress can compound the issue. It's, funnily enough, something that I've thought about a lot. I believe that it is perhaps a genetic issue.
Does it matter what you eat?
No, I don't believe so. I've actually, in a sense, been depending on my sister to figure it out. This expert that she went to see is actually, in conjunction with some pharmaceutical company, releasing a drug next month which specifically targets this issue.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence, indeed. But apparently she'll get the option to try it first.
Oh, great.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
Let her try it first.
Yeah, she'll be the guinea pig.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for releasing your gas in the fresh air.
Well, I try my best. I really do.
Very polite of you. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. You know, this is actually the most in-depth conversation I've ever had about my bowel movements, and it's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Likewise. Salman, has been wonderful talking to you, and I feel very hopeful that if there is someone like you on the planet digesting and eliminating regularly and with such ease and grace, that there is hope for the rest of us.
Well, thank you. I'd really never thought of it in those terms. I absolutely had no idea that my elimination schedule would be the cause of such happiness.
Well, you're a source of inspiration to all of us. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
The famed Mr. Salman Khan, model, digester, and eliminator. Di, na, dana, detete, datarir, detete, kita, detta, kata, gadigena, nagen, naga, takita, taka, datarir, detete, kata, gadigena, tete, tete, datarir, tete, kata, gadigena. Our concluding poem. If one day you find yourself in the belly of the east, believe it like you would the rising sun. It is no accident the east orients, while the belly holds a small ball of fire and the heated beast begs to be fed. The belly doesn't lie, beauty lays with you. Everyone sees her through their own bewildered eyes. One day, if you find yourself clawing to escape cold occidental demons, leave for as long as the beast remains, satiated even if belied. Return only when the fire lights your eyes again with belief. One day, beauty will adorn her essential belly with your incidental being.
D,
Beijing Now was written, edited, recorded, and produced by Dr. Jayashree Chander. Website setup and design, Srinivas Pakanati and Dirk Polson. Tabla and manjira played by Jayasi. Bass guitar by Pedro Ordonez. Drum set by Jisi Garcia. Compositions from Pandit Swapan Chaudhary. Concluding poem written by Jayasi. Distributed by Gypsy Jace Productions. Found at gypsyjace.net. gypsyjays.net. You can find us on the web at neijingnow.org. neijingnow.org.
Neijing Now is an entirely listener-supported endeavor. Please donate generously if these programs are beneficial and enjoyable. Your support is essential to keep this program alive.